Welcome to Shit Your Teenagers Won't Tell You, a podcast about everything you need to know about teens.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm Meredith, and we speak teenager.
Did we also mention that we're best friends?
We've worked as admission officers, prep school administrators, and most importantly, have coached thousands of teens. In other words, we have seen it all.
So join us every week as we give you the lowdown on all the shit your teenager isn't telling you. Because trust us, there's a lot of it. And if you don't know what to do with the teenagers in your life, don't worry, we've got your back. Hi, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Shit Your Teenagers Won't Tell You. And today we are doing another interview that I am always excited, but I'm particularly excited about because Rebecca, who we are about to interview, is a good friend of mine. We are part of a group of Chinese women who helped me improve my Chinese. And first and foremost, it helps me practice my Chinese. No, first and foremost, it's a wonderful group of women who provide love and support and are just a calming presence in my life. And Rebecca is core amongst them. So let me tell you a little bit about Rebecca. Her full name is Jia Rebecca Lee, and she is a therapist who used to be a lawyer. So that's interesting. She has a law degree from the University of Chicago, but she also has a master's degree in counseling and cognitive psychology and is now a therapist. When did you make that transition, Rebecca? And I'll keep going, but I'm just curious to know, when did you make that transition from law into therapy?
Back into therapy. I emphasize the word back. Back into therapy. 10 years ago. About 10 years ago.
So yeah. Why do you say back into therapy?
Yeah, because I started in college as a psych major, you know?
Oh.
And I even continued into a master's, actually a PhD program, which I abandoned for the sake of law. So this is a full circle for me.
Oh, so you're back. Well, and I want to also add to your profile, one of the things that is really missing in the field of mental health is Asian providers, right? Or just people of color in general who are providing counseling services and mental health services. So I do want to talk about that. And your main methodology, I think, now is Hakomi. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, humanistic. I use different approaches, but kind of like, you know, it's kind of a little bit like, you know, my dad, he likes to eat everything, but he puts hot sauce in everything.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit like, I have Hakomi-ized a lot of different approaches. I use a lot of approaches to different people. I believe everybody has their own preferred tomato sauce. That's why we have so many jars to juice in the supermarket. There's no one perfect tomato sauce. So I do have different approaches, but I Hakomi-ized it.
Can you say more about what Hakomi is? I didn't know about Hakomi until I met you.
Yeah. So the word sounds Japanese, but it has nothing to do with Japanese. So it's a Hopi. It's a Native American language. It's from one of their vocabularies. And it just means like something like, you know, who are you? Like, who are you? I want to know you. And even more detail is like, I want to know you in the different realms. It's like, I want to know different aspects of you. I want to meet you out there in the different ways that you show up. So the founders of Hakomi, this particular methodology, experiential psychotherapy, really love that the different realm aspect of it. So they kind of adopted this word to name their approach and got consent from the elders and now even have set up a fund these days to contribute back to the Hopi Nation. Yeah. So it's a lot of even backstory there.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of foundation that is in mindfulness. I was reading about it a little bit.
Great. Well, what have you learned?
Well, it seems like it's rooted in, you know, mindfulness and knowing yourself deeply. And also this mind-body connection seems to be a big part of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Good job. Good job, Kathy.
That was my brief research that I did on it. I was like, oh, there's more to it. I know. But I was like, I'm going to have Rebecca talk about it because I'm not sure a lot of people know about it. But it does help me understand you better as a person because mm-hmm. I find your energy when I'm around you, you're incredibly centered. And, you know, I feel peaceful when I'm around you. Like, great. You have this like, some people have this kind of like frenetic energy and you're always like very calm. Even when you're talking about things that are stressing you out, you're still, you know, I love that. So I'm like, oh, Hakomi, what is that? I get it.
Yeah. My little stress. Come sit by me.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another reason I wanted to have you on is because, you know, we, in my practice at Village, I work with a lot of immigrant families, particularly first gen Chinese immigrant families. And, you know, Meredith does as well as part of her practice at Village. And, you know, one of the things that we come up against is this resistance potentially or confusion about what therapy really is and if it's actually useful or real, right? Like, what do you mean you want my child to see a therapist? What do you mean that you think that they're depressed or anxious? Like, can't they just get over that on their own? Like, why do they need to talk to somebody about that? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a lot of stigma, as we know, in immigrant population or immigrant communities around mental health mm-hmm. And also misunderstanding. So can you shed a little bit of light?
Yeah. So one thing about Hakomi is to support defense and to value resistance. So right there, right now, right? I would really just be there to understand what their concerns are, because I think to a large extent are valid, because therapy is not one homogeneous thing. It's so many different things delivered by so many different people. How do I even know what they are? I don't know. It's like the word food. Like, I want to get your kid to eat some food. Right away, you will say, what are you talking about? What kind of food? Which restaurant? Where? When? You're going to have all these questions because you're very protective of your child.
Yeah. What would you say to a parent who is really struggling and trying to figure out what therapy is and why should I seek this for my child?
Yeah, there's some psychoeducation there, but I also wanted to first understand, you know, there's some resistance from the parent, like you said, right, the word, but it must have come from somewhere. So the parent has some understanding about this therapy or have had some prior encounter with therapy. And it's from that place they feel this is, may or may not be the right thing for my kid. So I want to understand, I want to meet them where they are. Like, okay, you understand, you know something about therapy, you heard something about therapy, tell me about it. Maybe even some unpleasant experience, tell me about it, right? So I would, from the get-go, have no agenda. I would not try to sell them anything. I would not try to persuade them anything. I would really respect their concern. Does that make sense? And when they feel that you're not trying to persuade them to do something or not having an agenda, actually, paradoxically, oftentimes the chances are they'll be more open to taking you. So that would be my approach. You know, when you go with someone who tries to persuade you to do something, you're going to be a little bit more on guard. And this is, I'm not talking about pretending to have no agenda. Like, I truly have no agenda. And chances are, you know, sometimes therapy is not just the only thing, right? You know, a few decades ago, especially in Asia, we don't have this stuff. And people talk to their friends, people talk to their families, and people talk to their relatives, elders, and whatever people in their community. Unfortunately, you know, time has changed. We get dislocated, we immigrant, and we don't have that community anymore. So we kind of have to now artificially develop some newer resources to support ourselves. So sometimes even bringing that perspective, it makes sense for people that therapy is somewhat artificial. You know, I don't know if I'm using, maybe this is a place where I should pause and erase that word. I don't want to say artificial. I would say foreign to a lot of people from different culture. because they relied on other sources for decades to support them. And all of a sudden, we're in a culture where, you know, people say, you should go to therapy. What the heck is that? Yeah, I can see that. I can understand that. My mom would not go to therapy. Just my put mom it would out not there.
I was like, does anyone on this call have a mom that's going to therapy? You know, one of the things that makes me think about Rebecca is, and this is true, I think we get asked these questions in coaching, you know, what do you do as a coach? How do you know it's working? And I see a natural kind of connection to the types of questions that you might get asked once you take on a new client. And I believe that, you know, behavioral change and insight take time. But how do you address that question? So you have a family or you're working with a child and the parents maybe have overcome that initial stigma or overcome that initial resistance enough to give it a try, but want, you know, and I want to be real that therapy or coaching is an investment of resources. So they want to see the return on that investment. And maybe that is sort of uniquely positioned because of our geography. And so many of the clients that we work with at Village are in business or are in tech, and they're really, data really matters. But when you're talking about these humanistic parts of being a person in the world, feelings and feeling states, they're not easily pinned down. So how do you, you know, if you're a parent who wants to give this a try, but you're nervous or reluctant, how do you know that therapeutic intervention is making a positive difference or making a positive impact?
Right. Really good question, right? So for me, that really defines the initial stage of the work, is to really clarify what they are looking for. And what they're looking for may or may not be the same as what I may have some judgment about their situation, right? I really have to put my judgment aside and really meet them what they are looking for. So that is the first stage of goal setting. It's like, okay, what are you looking to change? What have you tried in the past to change this? Why did it not work? Or what did work? And so to understand what it is that they're trying to change. And even the simple process will bring out so much rich stuff, right? For example, family of three, family of four coming to therapy. It seems like they're, you know, keep fighting about one thing, but the problem is very different from different perspectives. So in a way, like, everybody has their own different problem. Maybe mom's problem is why the kid keeps working so late at night and not going to bed, not efficient enough. Or mom's problem is like not getting enough sleep. Dad's problem about the kid is you're not efficient enough. What happened? What did you learn at school? The school on top of things? The kid's problem is, I want to feel competent. My parents don't believe in me. So they could all come, you know, they experience the same thing, but they have very different problems to solve. You know, that's the beauty of family therapy. It's like you have to be able to hold these different problems, and slowly people can really understand, we're asking for different things.
When your child is in distress, and
which happens often,
which is, you know, like every Tuesday. And especially because we work in adolescence, and adolescence is sort of by construct a volatile time and a lot of toggling between, you know, a lot of growth is happening. It's always hard for families to, you know, they come to us all the time with, how do we differentiate between a normal realm of sort of behavior and aberrant behavior that maybe needs more clinical or serious attention than just talking amongst ourselves or trying a couple of interventions at home? You know, where is that line? And I imagine it's different, right, for different kids and different needs. But as a therapist, sort of what advice would you give to parents who are sort of struggling to know when they need to up the ante or not?
For me, as a therapist, I'll talk to anyone who wants to talk to me. You know, a lot of my clients who come to therapy, they function really well. They're very intelligent, very wise, even compassionate, kind, but they want to talk to someone to grow even more. not to say that they don't have distress. And then there are people who are really in, you know, really depressed mode and really dealing with a lot of anxiety. So it's like a full spectrum of things, right? So if they want to talk to me, I always like welcome that. But from a parent's perspective, I would say, if you worry, go talk to someone. May or may not be a therapist. It could be teacher. It could be the kid's pediatrician. Could be a good friend of yours. But don't worry alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good life advice. Don't worry alone.
Don't worry alone. Yeah.
That's great advice. Shifting to, I mean, you are a parent of a lovely teenager. Teenage boy, who we all love.
Indeed. Indeed.
I know that he, as lovely as he is, can stress you out and brings up your own anxiety as a parent. And that's something we see all the time at Village, is that as much as we're coaching kids, we're coaching parents on how to manage their own anxiety about their kids and the choices that they're making and the path that they're going down, et cetera, et cetera. What advice would you give? And I watch you do this because in our little group of women, you know, all of them.
We talk.
Yeah, we talk and everybody except me, but we are oftentimes giving parenting advice because of the spaces that we work in. What advice do you have for parents around managing their own anxiety and expectations for their kids? I think that's where it comes from a lot of times, is just what you want for your child, what you think should be happening for your child isn't happening, or at the pace that you want it to be happening, right? And that brings up stress, worry, anxiety. What would you say to those parents? What advice have you given yourself in those instances, or your husband?
Yeah, the first thing I say is that, thank God they're doing their job. Have mercy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I will share, but I wanted to ask the two of you, because you actually probably have dealt with way more adolescents and their anxious parents than I have. I'm actually interested in what you do, because you do this with parents all the time, way more frequent than I do. I work mostly with couples and then to a lesser extent with families. And often families are either family with kind of school age, they just enter school system, that's a stressor point. And the kind of the middle part of it is the adolescent high school-ish family. And then the other end is college kids. So those are typically the families I work with. I also work with families with kind of adult children, but sometimes something happened in their kind of shared journey that bring them back together again. But so in terms of quantity, I have not worked with as many adolescent families as you have. What you guys?
Yeah. Well,
what do you say to the parents?
You
I'm sorry,
Kathy.
Turning the table on you a little
I
bit.
I like it. I can tell you're a therapist, Rebecca.
She sure
the
is.
Open-ended question fired right back at us, Kathy.
I thought you were in the hot seat. You're putting me in the hot seat. Well, I tell parents to, I mean, they have to take care of themselves, right? I encourage parents to have their own lives separate of their children, own goals, purposes, things that they can focus on that have nothing to do with their kids. And the other thing I think I tell parents a lot is to try, and as hard as it is, to sit with the discomfort of the unknown. Like, that's something all of us struggle with. We, you know, it's a human being struggle with that, and mm-hmm. parents struggle with it.
Yeah. Of course.
And, you know, how do you do that? That's maybe you can answer that. How do you sit with the unknown? And how do you love the kid that you have right now? Right?
I love that.
Yeah. Like, how do you accept and love the child that you have right now while still encouraging their growth and supporting them and providing boundaries and all of the things that they need to be good adults, good, healthy adults? I think it's hard to hold that space for kids when you're frustrated and angry at what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? I had a mom email me this morning saying, oh, my son has 2 D's and I'm about to strangle him. And how do you, in those moments, still accept and love the child that you want, that you have? And how do you keep your anxiety in check in those moments? Is just to remember that he's a human and everything's going to be okay. This is not forever. And, you know, we're going to get through it one step at a time. I think that's just probably life advice, right?
Yeah. I mean, I love everything you said. It's just really like these parents are, they need to be kind of resourced more than they have in that moment, right? When these things, kind of their kids' behaviors or external crisis, or some of those are kind of imposed by our kind of dysfunctional system, right? The amount of homework, the college pressure, all of these are not, they're man-made processes. A lot of our parents are just under-resourced to deal with all these things. So we just need to activate the resources outside of us. Friends, therapists, coaches, like wonderful people like you. I literally, go ahead, Meredith.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I think the two pieces I would add to what Kathy said is the importance of community. Because when you're a parent, especially, you know, kid one, and even if you have multiple children, they're all different and move through life differently. Everything is a first. And so we tend to be calmer when it's the 401st time we've encountered something, not the first time we've encountered something. And so I think when you're able to build connection and community with other parents, it normalizes the anxiety. And sometimes I watch parents shame or beat themselves up, you know, for popping off at their kid, for, you know, set, you know, for being super anxious and they know better. And I think the self-compassion is the second piece, like really building in opportunities for self-compassion, because it's just so hard to summon that, you know, equanimity when you don't have sort of an ability to like normalize your own feeling states. Like, yeah, you're going to like, as a parent, you're going to freak out. You're going to be angry. You're probably going to raise your voice. You're going to say dumb things, and you're going to be like just the millions of other parents on the planet who are doing that right now in this moment on Thursday, 2:35. And I think that's something that I would add to that. But it's hard, you know, because parents are one of the things that I think is so interesting to watch, and we struggle with it, is parents are really busy people. Often the kids we work with are really busy people. So prioritizing wellness, however they define that, right? It could be taking a walk with a friend. It could be going to church. It could be meditating for 10 minutes in the morning. I often find that that's a really hard sell.
Yeah. So I love everything you said too, Meredith. I'm sending my kids to the two of you in the future. Yeah, that self-compassion piece, and know that it's a practice that you have to do over and over again. It's kind of like exercise, right? It's not something either you have or you don't have. It's something sometimes we have to get a little bit of extra shot from our friends. Sometimes we do a little bit more practice this week. So ebbs and flows, and it's a process. It's a practice. The more you do it, the better you get at it. I also kind of, this conversation made me remember a Comey session that we just had, a group of therapists. And this is the beautiful part about Hakomi. It's not just a skill. It's not a skill. It's not a technique. It's not a method. It's so much of focus is about the therapist as a person, right? So we work on our own stuff all the time consistently. So I've been doing this weekly kind of therapy development on my own and for 30 minutes, and then we switch table, we work on the other therapist, and then I'm a therapist for the other therapist as a client. So I've been doing this for a few years, and it's just like tremendous for me as a person. But in the session this morning we just had, without sharing any of the confidential details, one person was talking about his childhood experience, how he was traumatized by his anxious and or depressed mother. 20 minutes after that, the next round, the other therapist was talking about herself as an anxious and depressed mother trying to support the kid. So all of a sudden, you know, literally two sides of the coins are happening at the same time with me in the room. So that's what really is, I think, complex and also humbling, is that like everybody truly is doing their best at any given moment. Like I viscerally want, you know, feel that And when I really viscerally feel that, there's no room for judgment in me about whether the parent is doing something right, whether the kid is doing something right. The other thing about the kind of psychotherapy I practice, the Pacomi method, is that it really values that the client develop, therapists support the client develop the insight, him or herself. If I have to put this into a, you know, I'm trying to think of an analogy. It's kind of like native plants. We talk about that all the time, right? We want to put more native plants in the native environment. They grow better. If the client himself or herself can use the experience to develop his or her own insight, that is just going to take hold so much better. Vis-a-vis advice that I give you, vis-a-vis a persuasion I give you, vis-a-vis some logical reasoning I try to reason you into, that's relatively superficial. Granted, they're low-hanging fruit. We do pick them. If you have a new insight, if I can share something and you're so ready to take it, chances are you have done a lot of work and you're ripe to take that insight as your own. But if it feels like you're trying to persuade me into something, there's resistance. So then I'm not ready for that. And even if I do some behavioral change in the moment to do it, short term may work, it definitely will not take hold.
Sounds like parenting.
Parenting, you do it over and over and over and over, right? So literally, it's a formative experience. You shape this kid both to comply, but also develop strategies to resist. And that is going to become the long-term personality of this kid. You know, if parents are really pushy, oh, you know, the kids are going to, over time, develop different personalities to adapt and cope and adjust to that. You know, kids may become very, very secretive. Kids may become very, like, people-pleasing. Kids may become just really, like, I'm doing everything on my own. I don't need any help. Very independent, right? So it could be different traits. And oftentimes, they both have their potential future costs in their interpersonal relationship, but they also can have can become their strength, you know, independence, right? So it's a strength, it's a trait that our society values, but it can also be costly in the personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you feel like Rebecca is speaking to us directly in a therapy session?
It's possible. Did you provide her with primers, like some notes?
Seriously, I was like, wow, you're just, this is like, could be a one-on-one therapy session.
So you're saying some of my strengths could also be some of my setbacks? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It sounds like something connected with your experience, maybe both as a coach and maybe person. But this is the thing about, you know, about therapy, right? It's like, it can be just real. I mean, what's really the difference between a therapy session and a really trusting relationship? That's really the essence of it. So the first thing, the most important thing for me with my clients is really, like, I find every opportunity to make this person feel celebrated, not just validated. That sounded so cognitive to me. I don't like that word. I want this person to feel like celebrated, you know, kind of like how my dog rates me.
Aspen.
Yeah. But it comes from the heart, you know, it has to be genuine, right? So you really have to really feel the way you show up in the session, especially like you guys know adolescents, and they have the antenna for anything that's fake.
The bullshit meter.
The bullshit meter, yes.
We are. It wouldn't be a complete episode of our podcast if one of us didn't curse at least once.
So in a way, I think the two of you kind of reflect that bullshit meter training, because there's no bullshit. I could feel that the two of you are very real.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you're saying about being a therapist, because so much of it applies to the work that we do as coaches, right? So much of what we're trying to do with the kids that we work with is establish rapport and trust. And the other thing that I love that you said is this idea of non-judgment. Right. And that's so hard when you're really close to somebody. And so that's why it's hard for parents. It's not that they don't love their kids or appreciate all of the good that they possess. It's really hard to remove the judgment,
mm-hmm.
right? And yeah. not let the judgment enter conversations.
Mm. It's a worries, right? Underneath that judgment is the worries and concerns. And the closer you kind of focus on the immediate, like must happen thing, whether it's college application or homework and going to bed on time, when you start to focus on that thing, your worries are going to take over. But if you can magically find a way to take a deep breath and zoom out a little bit, feel the backside of your body and sit back in your chair and look at the bigger horizon, and you'll know your kids are going to be okay.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to sit back more.
I was like, I'm sitting back right now.
That is literally one of the, I did one session, one Hakomi session where we experience sitting in the session with the client and, but feeling the backside of my body versus feeling the front, like leaning forward, feeling the front of my body. It's a different kind of groundedness.
Yeah. You know what I like about this? And I do agree with you, Cassie, that I do think this podcast episode is turning into a personal session for the two of us. And I'm here for it. Thank you so much. But as someone who has, you know, struggled with anxiety her whole life, so much of how I think about, you know, and I, everyone's, the physicality of anxiety, I think, shows up differently for different people. However, I think often it can be, it's interesting. It made me think about how it shows up in the front of your body, right? A constricted throat, a tight chest, or maybe like some nausea, right? It just is so interesting to hear what you're saying as a physical counterpoint to so much of how anxiety can show up and somatically, like being in your body through anxiety rather than how I think a lot of us, you know, we cope with anxiety by talking about anxiety, which, you know, sometimes is helpful and sometimes isn't. Anyway, that was apropos of nothing other than it seemed like a very interesting intervention that I think is very, you know, indigenous wisdom is always good.
Because those people don't experience that much anxiety, right?
It's amazing.
Or didn't. But the two of you, you know, you are putting your grounded bodies in front of the kids.
Yeah, I noticed. I mean,
so do not underestimate how impactful that can be for them.
Mm.
I do notice how differently I coach when I'm feeling grounded versus feeling scattered and anxious and worried, right? So if I have a kid that I'm really worried about and there's all the stuff that's happening that feels time sensitive and I'm coming to that session like, oh, we got to get all this up in here. Like that session never feels good at the end of it. We might get things done, but I don't feel like energetically I'm like, I don't feel great about that, even though it was a productive session. Whereas, and I'm thinking of a specific student that I'm coaching in particular, I consciously went into our next session and was really just grounded and this non-judgmental, I'm going in, I have no agenda. I'm just going to hear what you need and I'm going to try to address that, right? And work with you on whatever comes up. In a much more loving, warm, energetically positive coaching session. And you know, as I'm saying this, I'm wondering if this is good advice for parents too, right? Like noticing when you are talking to your kids, what energy are you coming into this conversation with? How do you ground yourself in preparation and like set an intention of like, I'm just coming into this with an open mind, non-judgment, and I just want to hear, right? I want to hear and listen.
Yeah. And even as you're talking about this, right, and both you and Meredith, I noticed that both of you slow down. Kind of the pace, the words, how they come out, slow down a notch. And so if that's one, I have to give one advice to all parents. Just so simple. Just slow down a notch. Yeah.
I love that.
when you slow down a nudge, the thing is reactivity happens fast. We have to slow down for the frontal cortex to be online and to say, okay, then you can react from there. And you can also give your limbic system, et cetera, a break, right? So just slowing down changes everything.
Now you all understand what I mean. And Meredith, you understand what I mean at the beginning when I introduced Rebecca, how I said she's a calming presence in my life.
I do.
Feel calmer.
I do feel calmer. Rebecca is like your May now. I have, and Rebecca, maybe you'll also be my Rebecca. I have a friend who when I introduced her to Kathy was like, she's so calming. I just feel so good after. I was like, I get it. I love that. I'm so bad at slowing down, but it is so powerful. It really is so powerful and can be so transformative. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you is if there's just like one little nugget you would give parents. And I think you just gave it. I think that's just such good advice.
And by the way, if you were to tell your teen kid or any kid to slow down, it would not work. So it's the saying that they get 20% from your words and 80% from how you carry yourself, what you do. So if you can slow down, you automatically help to regulate them to slow their pace. But if you're fast and if you tell them to slow down, no chance. And don't deliver it verbally. Deliver it directly, non-verbally to the, can I use the fancy word, subconscious?
Yes.
Okay.
You can.
Ooh, I feel so relaxed now. I'm like,
I think Kathy's going to go take a nap.
Rebecca, as your therapist, now you know why, because she's amazing.
I know. Such amazing wisdom. Rebecca, thank you so much.
I'm glad to be your golden retriever here.
Love it. Yes.
Golden retriever.
Yeah, I do feel we're so super focused societally as problem, in terms of focusing on problem solving and therapy, solving problems, and we don't leave enough space to celebrate people. So I really want to celebrate people. And Kathy, you actually really bring the celebratory energy to our little kind of group, right? Whether it's through food or through your jokes and kidding around, to me, all of that is celebration.
Yes, I want life to be a party. You know me, I'm always celebrating. I was a cheerleader in high school, and that is me. Like I am, I just want to like pump everybody up.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
So in that sense, you are doing therapy. So, this is therapy.
Yeah, it's definitely a version of it for sure. I say that to parents a lot. Well, Rebecca, it was so nice to have you on our podcast. We've been talking about it for so long, and I'm glad we finally made it happen and that we have your wisdom to share with our audience. It's so great.
It's been great.
Truly.
I'm going to re-listen to this episode for myself.
And change the audio speed to even slower.
At 0.5.
I think Rebecca is giving us some feedback about how fast we talk during our podcast.
I loved it.
We do talk fast sometimes. It's true.
I loved it. Yeah, you too. I love your episodes. I've listened to quite a number of them, and I think they're very, very sharp, very refreshing, and just really, really honest.
Yep.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
All right.
Great to have you on. Thank you so much. And stay tuned for our next episode.
Okay.